Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan. O-Dog is off to do some panel work tonight. I believe MJ is going to be a part of that. And Johnny will join us a little bit later in the hour, get his take on the Leafs Habs tonight in Toronto. And Matthews, I think he hits 40 tonight. I'm going into every night. Well, I just expect him to score every night.
Yeah, that's your over-under is 10. I mean, it's one. It's not like he needs three. It's
exactly.
One. Just, you know, he's one away. We talked about it. McJesus is what, two? Or what do you have, two the other night? So what is he?
He needs 7 points, I believe.
In the last four.
In the last, yeah. Now you got, it changes every
sorry,
day. Now you got
yeah,
me a little bit confused. But
yeah, I'm a bit confused. Or nine in the last five or something like that. I can't remember. But he's close. I mean, Matthews is closer because you're right. Like Matthews could be done by 7-10 tonight because he usually scores the first goal of the game.
Right, exactly. And yeah, McDavid's got five games left. He needs 7 points. He's at 93. So, you know. That's not going to happen tonight. Edmonton's playing, but I wouldn't be shocked if he had three or four tonight. And Dave Tippett came out today, said not interested in shutting him down, slowing him down.
I saw that.
He's playing.
I thought it was interesting that he's tinkered with his back end. Like that Bouchard, I like him. I think he's got a chance to be a good defenseman. They're kind of they haven't played him very much on the back end. But it was like he said, we're going to try a couple of things, and then next week, like, we want our playoff roster, and we want to play with them. Like, and he's, like, not thinking once about shutting McDavid down, which is, I get it. I respect it. He's like, he wants to play. He wants to be in tip-top shape. You know, there's always that layer, as there is with any team, that he gets a shot on the foot or something like that. But you can't bubble wrap guys. You got to let them play.
That's it. That could happen in 12 minutes of action or 22 minutes of action.
Right.
And the truth is, I'll believe it when I see it. It's one thing for Tippett to say he's still going. I'm not convinced the last game or two of the year he's going to play 24 minutes. You know, I just don't see it. And I think once he hits 100 points, as much as they don't want to acknowledge the elephant in the room, they all know it. Like, yeah. It's a bold number. It's a significant number. If he hits 100, it's the icing or it's the cherry on top of what's been just a remarkable year. So
right.
I'm not convinced it's not going to get to a point where they do scale him back a little bit. But I think McDavid has to be counseled here as well, right? Like, it is about gearing up for the playoffs, and Tippett said he wants him feeling like he's at 100% and he's hitting on all cylinders. And I would have to believe that that conversation happened with McDavid. Now that they've clinched and they know they're going to be second, they're not really playing for anything at this point. So talk to the player, ask him what he wants, and if McDavid said, I want to stay in the lineup and go, then stay in the lineup and go. And listen, the same thing here. Like, I haven't heard anything about Austin Matthews coming out of the lineup. Like, maybe that'll change if he hits 40,
well,
you know, but I haven't heard the Leafs address that topic. If Marner's playing as many minutes as anyone else in the league. I don't hear anything about Mitch Marner having his numbers or minutes scaled back.
No.
And the Leafs have wrapped up top place. We know what's going to happen here.
I guess my point is they might, to your thought process, if Matthews hits 40 tonight, they may readjust. They might go to him and go, you know what? Because I think these guys have the silent kind of, you know, I guess, target in their mind. The target is 40 for Matthews.
They
Maybe
know
it's
what's
45.
Up. They know
Maybe,
what's up.
Who knows? Maybe Matthews is like, I want 45. Like, who knows? But McDavid, it's 100. So if McDavid hits 100 in two games, they might revisit it. You know, I think the coaches, it's almost like that unwritten rule. Don't talk about it. Just let them play. Because the minute you start talking about it, you draw more attention to it, and it's like a shutout. You start saying shutout, and everyone's looking at it. I think let Matthews play, let McDavid play, and if there is a chance next week, because they still have games, maybe it is if it's not a healthy scratch, it's like, hey, you know what? Like, we want to taper. We're going to just roll four lines. It's not about matching tonight.
That's probably the best way to go about it. You know,
right.
Like keep stay in a rhythm. That's fine. Work on special teams. Like, there's other things that come into it, right? There's other components. Like, it's not just 5-on-5 getting points, skating well, looking good, taking some contact, throwing some contact. It's
right.
Okay. This guy kills penalties. This guy is on the power play, and what are we doing in certain scenarios that we can work on, have tape that we could apply come playoff time. And
right.
in a way, it also depends probably on who you're playing. Like these, a lot of times in sports, you know, people are superstitious and they believe in karma and they don't want to mess with the hockey gods. And like if you're the Leafs and you're playing the Habs are
right.
still fighting. You know, they're fighting for positioning and where they're at and trying to get up off the mat. Do you want to mess with that? Do you want to give them your best effort? These are all philosophical decisions that are made in different ways. And every team has a different viewpoint. Everyone looks
right.
at it differently. Every player has a different viewpoint. And, like, case in point, with what's going on with the Raptors tonight, Nick Nurse is speaking before the game. He's speaking right now. I'm reading this. This is courtesy of Josh Lewenberg. Josh, I believe, is on the Zoom call with Nick, and Nick is getting ready for the game tonight against Washington. And Nick Nurse had this to say about the decision to rest Kyle Lowry tonight.
Right.
When asked, you know, how is it determined that Lowry would be out? Nurse said, quote, how's it determined? We, being myself, Bobby, and Masai, talk about who we want to play and who we want to see and who we're going to evaluate. That's what it comes down to, and that's where we are with it tonight. So, effectively, this isn't a real game. This is tape that we're going to evaluate. This is a preseason game. That's what Nick Nurse is telling us.
Yeah.
For the Raptors tonight, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, this is about evaluation. Not about wins. That'd be ideal. Sure, they prefer to evaluate a win. That means Malachi Flynn played well, right?
Right.
That means Cam Birch gave them something tonight. But this is them telling you everything you need to know.
Agreed.
They couldn't care less about winning. They're not interested in chasing the playoffs, and maybe they're not going to get there anyway based on the math. They're three
right.
games back, six games to go, but this is the one you have to have if you think you can get in or you want to get in, and they're deciding Kyle Lowry would be better for him not to go, which
sure.
means Kyle signed off on it too, right? Because all we've heard for a year is Kyle's different than everyone else. Kyle's the king. We're not going to do anything that would besmirch his reputation. Well, if he wants to go tonight, I'd have to believe he'd have the power to say, I'm going. Clearly, he was okay with the decision. To chat about it, here is Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider. Brian, what do you make of this story? You know, obviously it's in Tampa, but it relates to Toronto, that Kyle Lowry will not play tonight based on rest. And Nick Nurse just basically said it's because they want to see other players that they can evaluate in the game tonight.
Thanks.
Yeah, but what took so long? Why'd they keep him at the trade deadline if they're going to tank?
Well, boy, is that a question that has really been asked a lot of times in the NBA over the last 2 months. You know, I don't even think Kyle understands what happened. In talking to the teams that they were talking with, I don't think they understand what happened. You know, Masai had his reasons for keeping him, and they are not readily apparent. And, you know, there's 100 different things that could have happened. Probably only Masai, maybe Bobby Webster. I don't even know if Bobby knows. I mean, it's a strange decision. And not only that, but then they followed up by straddling the line for so long. I honestly can't understand it. I don't know. I also think that you have to see what happens this summer to figure out whether it worked or not. But it's going to be kind of hard for them to participate in a sign and trade with Kyle. So unless you intend to keep him, which, you know, I'm not sure where Kyle's head is on that, I don't see the move. And that's I felt the same way since the trade deadline. And, you know, they have some things going for him. I mean, you know, the way Flynn has played is obviously a bright spot. But it's not something, because, you know, typically Masai has everything buttoned up. And you sort of see what he's doing and say, wow, he's ahead of the curve. What a great move. Or wow, what a great calculated risk. We can't see that right now. And I'm not saying that I won't change my mind when I see it play out, but I don't see it right now.
That's where kind of where I was going is we got sold at the deadline that basically they valued Kyle so much and they didn't feel like the offers kind of fit what would basically send him the other way somewhere to a different team. Like, did you get that sense? Or like you say, you're talking about, well, Masai keeps everything close to the vest. Like, is it possible that they just really overvalued Kyle at this situation, and now they're kind of, for lack of better words, because I want to show Kyle respect, stuck with him, and they're still tanking.
Well, from what I understand, one of the issues was the teams that were talking to the Raptors about trading for Kyle, they were a little bit concerned about what Kyle was going to cost them in free agency. It had been kind of made known what Kyle would be looking for from a contract standpoint. And look, just because you say something in February doesn't mean that's what you're signing for in August. But the teams who are trading for Kyle, you know, if you're going to give real players for him, you're obviously going to want to keep him. And some of the teams, from what I understand, were a little bit worried about what that price tag was going to be. And that affected their offer. They didn't want to make an offer for somebody they weren't 100% sure they were going to keep. And that fact probably impacted his value and might have kept his value below what the Raptors were looking for. However, that fact shouldn't have come as a surprise to the Raptors. When you elect to start the season with Kyle and going into the last year of a contract, you know that once you get to mid-season and you think about trading him, his value is going to come down because there is some uncertainty about that. But I do think that that was a factor. And one of the things that was described to me is when we got towards the buzzer and the Raptors thought that the bidding war would increase and the teams would increase their offers, the teams kind of said, look, our offers are in. We're not increasing them. There wasn't the bidding war that maybe the Raptors thought. And in that case, you know, typically an organization has either decided to trade the player or not. And so you get the best deal and you make the deal. And if you don't, you know, hit a grand slam on it, well, that's the nature of it. It's a part of playing poker. Masai chose to fold. And sometimes there's valor in that. But again, he couldn't have sat there on that day and thought he was going to get a better deal in the summer. I just don't think that that's theoretically possible. It's not impossible, but I don't think it's favorable.
With Brian Windhorst of ESPN, Kyle Lowry not going tonight due to rest and evaluation. That is effectively what Nick Nurse is saying, courtesy of himself, Bobby Webster, and Masai Ujiri. And what's intriguing about all this and overarching the whole season is that Masai Ujiri, he may not be making that call anyway come the summer based on his own contractual situation. And that's what I keep coming back to here. As you say, Brian, that, you know, he keeps things close to the vest. No one's really sure what's going on. Maybe these are bigger plans in terms of a sign and trade in the future. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that Messiah's already got one foot out the door so he doesn't care about the future. Obviously he would. But if it is about a bigger plan that he wants to see through, can we parse those words to suggest that maybe it's a formality and he is going to be back? It's just a matter of time.
You know, maybe there's some sort of super secret plan that I don't know about, but again, this is the conversations I've been having with league executives for months, and they don't see it. They don't see what the move is. Now, again, I don't know everything. Masai knows more than I do. I'm a little bit surprised that the times that it has been brought up to him about his contract, that he has bristled. And it's possible that it has to just have to do with scar tissue with the local media. But, you know, players' contracts are very well known, and they are asked about their free agency routinely. It is a part of life for a player going in. You know, when you are that level of importance to an organization and, you know, it's well known, you know, your status as a free agent and you make that much money, it's part of the deal. And so it's been a little bit off-putting to me that he's been so, like, almost, thought it was a front that he would get asked about it. When it's one of the most important, I can't remember the last time an executive became a free agent like this, with his stature level. It's very unusual. And, frankly, I thought that, they probably didn't have the assets to go for James Harden to win that deal. But I kind of got the impression that they were half in, half out of that. They called on it. They sniffed around it, but they weren't 100% committed. We get to Kyle Lowry, they're half in, half out. We get to the playoffs, they're half in, half out. We get to Masai's questions about his future. He's evasive. I don't have clarity. And that's the one thing I would say about the Raptors is, you know, for the last 5 or 6 years, you had a real clarity of what they were doing. Sometimes they changed directions, but there was a real clarity there. I mean, Masai had a real will. And I just haven't detected that all year long. And, of course, your follow-up is that, well, what does it mean? I mean, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, well, you're not alone. I mean, we're in the same spot, and we're, you know, they're down in Tampa, which makes it even more difficult. Like, no one can connect. No one can get up close and personal. And in the era of COVID, I mean, I think a lot of teams are kind of taking advantage of the fact that, you know, we'll see you on Zoom, but I'm not going to see up close and personal. So
I'm sure it's
challenged your job. You know, like, you'd be a prime example of that, of a guy that can get up close and personal, and it's just not available to you.
The media, I mean, it's not because we're lazy, but the media is operating. This is not the best season the media has ever put forward in terms of coverage of the league.
Right.
We don't have the access to the players. We don't have the ability to be there at all. And I'm sure the teams love it. But there's a distance. You know, I don't think it's been the best season from a performance level from the teams, and I don't think it's been the best season from a performance level from the media, and I include myself in that. I mean, I was telling somebody the other day, guys, I have not met Zion Williamson yet. This is a preposterous, you know, this guy's going to be an all-NBA player, a top player in the league. My job is to know these guys. I haven't met him.
Right.
And so, you know, this is, you know, people are asking me questions about the Indianapolis Pacers and what's going on in that locker room. I mean, yeah, I've heard about it. I haven't seen an Indiana Pacer in the flesh in 2 years. You know, yeah, we have sources and we talk to those people, and yes, we knew there was trouble, but we're hamstrung a little bit, without question.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Go ahead, Noodles.
I was going to say, how much of a threat do you think the Knicks can be in the playoffs? Like, I know James Dolan is in the news right now for other things with his hockey team, but you know, his basketball team seems pretty solid. Like, where do you think they could go?
Well, they've got a really big four games on this road trip left. They play Phoenix, I think, next, and then they play both LA teams. And I can't remember who the last game on the road trip is. They're only a half game in on fourth. They may go 2-2, but if they take it on the chin on this road trip, which is, I don't know, more likely than not, they may come back out of the top six. I mean, their status is fragile. They've had this road trip sort of looming for a while, and they did a great job of taking advantage of a lot of home games leading into it. But we're going to have to see where they're at. You know, if they emerge on the other side of this as the four seed and they have home court advantage, that would have meant that they would have played through, brilliantly. Boy, I would be really excited about them. But if they emerge through this and they're hanging on to six by the skin of their teeth, and they're playing Milwaukee in the first round, or they fall to seventh and have to get into the play-in, I mean, I don't know yet is the answer. But no matter what happens, they've had a spectacular season. They had almost no expectations coming in. They had the second lowest payroll in the league. They essentially decided to sit on their cap space, and they weren't able to do anything at the deadline with it. They did get Derrick Rose, but that was, you know, for a reserve player who's been great for them. But they're on a honeymoon right now. It's had a spectacular year. The pressure will come next year with the expectations.
Absolutely. Great stuff as always. Thank you, Brian.
Have a good day.
Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA Insider. I've got this clip I've been sitting on because someone tweeted this out a few days ago.
Okay.
There's a Leaf connection to this as well, because the Leafs and the Knicks, there's so many similarities. So many similarities. The history, the losing, how loud the fans are, the coverage. You know, New York's the mecca of basketball. Toronto, the mecca of hockey, you could argue. Right. And the fans, and this I think will ring true with you, Noodles, because you've taken your issue over the years.
I have.
With, you know, the Joe from the Bridge types who – the Leafs win a couple games in a row, and all of a sudden they're winning the cup. And, you know, this is a plan the parade type punchline stuff.
Okay.
So someone posted this on Twitter. I thought it was so brilliant. It's a Ric Flair clip, and we're going to play it.
Okay.
And it was entitled, "This is going to be the Knick fans. This is what you're going to hear from them after they had won 12 out of 13.
Promise you this, above all else, I'm going to be more obnoxious, more overbearing, and I'm going to make you all learn to love it, because you'll have no choice."
I love that clip. It's so true. They've been so bad for so long, and now they're on a bit of a heater, and they're back in the playoffs, and every Knick fan is Ric Flair. I'm going to be even more obnoxious, more overbearing. They haven't won a thing.
Right.
Yet Knick fans are puffing their chest out, being like, we're back.
Woo!
And they haven't won anything.
I was waiting for that because the punch is Ric Flair doing
it's
that.
It's the best.
You're right. I mean, people, they're passionate about their market. You're right. There is a parallel.
Leafs are in a similar spot. Yeah, I'm self-aware. I know it. I get it. I understand it.
But
it's the exact same thing. The Leafs get on a heater, and it's like we're going to be even more obnoxious, more overbearing.
Well, you know what it is, though? I would argue, and this is somebody who didn't grow up in this market, like this would be, if you were just normal, this is the time to be more obnoxious and all of that. Like, this is the time to act like you have the last 10 years. Because I've had arguments on this show about Leo Komarov and how good he is and how dare you disrespect. And I'm like, he's a third line player. Like, what are you guys talking about?
No, but now Ric Flair.
But now when the team is good, that's when you're like, should puff your chest out because you're like, this is what you've been talking about. But for 10 years, it's always been puffed chest out. But you've been arguing about, you know, people, Corbini and Holzer and
Holzer's
guys like
a top
that.
Four.
You know, right. Like,
a top four.
When that's not the case. So that was to be honest, that's the more frustrating part where you're like, hold on a second here. There's nothing to puff your chest out. Now is the time to puff your chest out when the
Absolutely.
Team is better.
But that's the beauty of this clip is it's going to be even worse than it was. Like, it was already bad.
Worse.
It was already obnoxious. It was already we're the biggest and the best, even though there's no reason to actually believe that or support it based on the way the teams actually played. But the Knicks win 12 of 13. The Leafs are in first place.
Yeah.
Ric Flair, baby.
Woo!
Mike Johnson coming up. Leafs Habs tonight. We'll get to that with him. Get him to break down what he saw at the Garden last night between the Rangers and the Capitals. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Leafs Habs tonight right here on TSN Radio. You can watch it on TSN 4. And the Leafs are looking, I guess, for redemption. You know, last time they were in Montreal, Cole Caulfield wins it in overtime. The Habs are looking to get off the mat because of what happened last night. They got beat up and I don't know what to think about this Carey Price scenario, Noodles. Like, he's not taking the trip, and he's not skating in gear. He's skating on his own, and we know what he's dealing with. But
I skated in gear today, I thought, for the first time. But then I was reading John Liu's notes. He was supposed to travel with the team and practice on Friday, tomorrow, but they changed it to an optional practice, so he's not going to – so they just figured he would set his skating full-time with only some of the scrubs who call him on an off day, he'll just stay back with the goalie coach and get shots there. So I think he's on a timeline to probably be back next week. I'm not worried about it. Here's why. They're making sure that he's 100%. He's only – like the injury was 2 weeks ago. Like Frederik Andersen and Carey Price are completely different. Frederik Andersen hasn't played in 2 months. That's an off season. 2 weeks – I think you get a couple practices and a game and you go. But for me, if I'm the Habs, I'm looking at like a concussion. You don't come back at 90%. You got to make sure this guy's feeling good.
Well, and that's the whole thing. That makes it almost more unpredictable, right? Like concussions can linger, as we know. Here's our TSN hockey analyst, our good buddy Mike Johnson. What do you make of the timeline of Carey Price?
Well, I don't know what to make of it because it's a concussion. So he can be around the ice. He can do nice, fancy stick handling, which I must say, he's got pretty good hands. If you've seen any of the clips of him stick handling around the net, he might have better hands than I did. But until he gets back and plays and gets in practice and gets a shot off the head or whatever's going on with him, you know, you could feel like you're close and you could be miles away. So I guess they're taking it day by day, but I don't know if there's any guarantee because he plans on practicing in a couple of days. That means he's going to be fine next week. I think the unknown nature of concussion says, I guess when he's back, he's back. But until then, we really don't know. Even if he's feeling better, we don't actually know how he's doing.
Yeah, right. I just wanted to pile on there, too, is with concussions, you know, you hope that things are great. Like, you know, we see guys come back from them all the time, but there are some times where there's setbacks. And that's why when you're looking at a timeline, I would much rather take a few extra days on the back end, if he gets cleared, to feel comfortable before you start putting yourself in it. Like, this isn't something where you rush through. I still think there's enough time, too. Like, the playoffs don't start next week. I think it's about 2 weeks. Would it be 2 weeks today, I think?
2 weeks today, likely. But I think he could go game one if he's been cleared, too, without playing in the regular season again. You know, I think basically what you're saying, too, is he's had enough games. He is who he is, and he's established as the number one. That's another thing. It's not like Jake Allen's been fine this year. But,
yeah, he's been good.
You know, Campbell and his situation, I think, is different than Allen and his situation, and that's Carey Price's net, where it's not the case anymore in Toronto. It feels like it's more Jack Campbell's net at this point, Johnny, and Freddie Anderson's got to prove that he's capable of taking it back.
Yeah, but I don't know if there's enough time for him to prove that. I mean, given how well Jack Campbell has played this year, and I heard you earlier talking about, you know, the hot run that he was on felt maybe like a hot run, but now this is kind of, he's just playing like a quality goalie. And so if Freddie, you know, gets through a couple games in the minors and plays one game in the NHL and plays okay, would that be enough to supplant Jack Campbell and what he's done all year long and including the last couple months? I'm with you. I don't think so. I think Jack Campbell is very likely, barring something unforeseen, the starter of game one, and they may use both. It's probably inevitable. They will use both goalies if they have any kind of lengthy run, but it probably will be Jack Campbell's net to start, and it should be. I mean, Freddie hasn't played in how long, Noodles? Like 2 months. I guess
2 months.
Half, you know, almost half the year he's not been around the team. So, you know, they're used to Jack Campbell. They certainly enjoy playing in front of him. He's given them quality goaltending. And so I think sometime in the last, whatever, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, the mindset of the organization probably flipped and saying, you know what? This is going to be our guy regardless. And hopefully we have Freddie Anderson available to us if we need him. But this guy's done enough to warrant the starts.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. So it was a wild scene in New York last night. It's been a wild scene for the better part of 72 hours down there, considering what happened on Monday and then on Tuesday with the statement, the firings on Wednesday, the game last night, 6 fights in the first 5 minutes. And there is a theory out there that some hold that if Tom Wilson was given a 10-game suspension, the Rangers would not have reacted the way they did last night. Do you believe in that theory, or do you think it was absolutely irrelevant because the Rangers were going to feel like they had to prove they were tough enough to have a reaction the way that they did last night?
I think that if Tom Wilson had been suspended for 10 games, there would not have been 6 fights. There might have been one. There might have been two. There would not have been an opening line brawl. Brian Strome would not have dropped his elbow pad and gone off with Lars Eller. Like, absolutely, it would have been a different response. Now you're right. The idea that when a team hears it's collective toughness be challenged that way, it's almost inevitable they're going to respond, including guys who don't usually do that. And the Rangers have a whole bunch of guys fighting last night who don't usually do that, and good for them for doing it. But I am a believer that if the team felt justified and the league came down hard on Tom Wilson, guess what? The narrative would not have been so loud, Hayes, is that people would have not have been questioning, well, the Rangers don't have anyone to do anything about it. That's why he did it. If they had someone tougher, if they were tougher, then they would have done something. It would have been the story, and the narrative would have been Tom Wilson out of control, got suspended for 7 games, and what's his problem? And it wouldn't be about so loudly and so publicly about what's wrong with the Rangers. And I think it's because it was so loud and so public, that's why they reacted the way they did. So if the suspension had been stiffer, I think the response would have been maybe a little bit, but nothing like what we saw.
MJ, are you buying the timing of the firings, like the statement? Like, it's all just, I mean, you know, it just is all fishy. Like, if you don't like the direction the organization is headed, you know, you want a different leadership, strong leadership in that, do you not wait till Saturday or Sunday? Like, their season's done Saturday. Like, why the immediate firing the day after a statement was released where apparently some people agreed with it, some people didn't? Then you've got Messier coming out and saying the team's like, like, what the hell's going on, and what's your impression of the timing of the firing and then, you know, the reaction of everyone?
So it does seem rather peculiar to happen on that day. if it's unrelated to the letter to the league and to what happened with Tom Wilson, then why would you do it yesterday amongst all that chaos to add to the fire? Now, I read James Dolan's statement today. He said because they were going on the road, and so they didn't want to do it on the road, and they wanted Chris Drury to do the year-end meeting. Okay, again, they're playing in the East. I'm not even sure where their next games are. One's in Boston tonight. Like, you can fire them in Boston. It's a three-hour drive back to New York. It's not like they're going over to Australia. Like, they can slip a bird down to Pittsburgh and get them home, and it's not a big deal if that's that important to you. So yeah. I have a hard time buying that, you know, the idea that it's a productivity. Like, I don't know what James Dolan thought the Rangers were supposed to be this year. They were probably the sixth best team heading into that the year in that division. They're going to finish fifth. I think they actually had a good year by what their expectations should have been. So that doesn't really ring true either. Now, listen, Chris Drury's been around for a long time. If you like Chris Drury, you think he's the guy, okay. Like, it's your team. Do what you want. But to blame it on production, it rings hollow to me. And therefore, it kind of feels like it might be tied into whatever else is going on, even if all parties that are still there deny that's a fact.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, because Drury, I believe, said today the expectation was not to make the playoffs. So
right. So what do they missed it by one? So what are they complaining about? Like,
exactly.
Right.
They did well. It's strange.
It is strange. And what is going to be difficult, I think, over the next couple of weeks. Now, we'll be focused clearly on the playoffs, and that'll be a distraction. But at some point, the dust is going to settle, and everyone's going to try to recalibrate this whole league and the standings once we go back to normal. With the assumption that we will go back to normal. And we had this conversation the other day about Ottawa, who has really played incredibly well. I mean, they got themselves up off the mat. They were in a really bad spot earlier in the year based on how they were playing, and they were getting smoked on the road. And they've completely redeemed themselves, and they finished incredibly strong. Yet I can't commit to them being a playoff team next year, because if we go back to normal, Tampa's in the fold again. Boston's in the fold again. Florida, who's had a really good year, they're back in the fold. The Leafs are not going to fall off. So, and I think probably the same thing has to apply in New York. You know, like, once we get back to normal here, who are the Rangers? Who are the Ottawa Senators? Who is Minnesota when we're back to a regular season? And we're going to have to figure that out at some point.
It's a very good point. And whenever you're trying to, for us, it's all fun and games. We can try to guess who's going to win and who's not going to lose. But if you're running an organization, there's far greater importance on having an accurate assessment of who your team is, who the players are, and what your potential is and what your timing is, and trying to do all that in your own little unique 8-team or 17 bubble is going to be more challenging than a normal summer. But that's why they're paid the big bucks. That's why they're the general managers. They have to make good calls and be honest in their evaluations of their own team. So it'll be tricky, though. Like, Ottawa is a great case because this year is so strange, and they're playing Vancouver, and what's Vancouver right now, because they're all a mess. And, you know, there's lots of things to it, but, the divisions go back to normal. Different challenges will present themselves to those teams. But, I think you also, like, they did play this year, and they played the teams they had to, and you can still dig pretty deep into what's going on based on what the Rangers did this year, where they're good, where they're bad, what Ottawa did this year, where they're good, where they're bad. And I think you should be able to come up with a pretty good answer.
Yeah, well, being honest with yourself, like, is a priority. Like, you get shocked. I've been shocked many times where a team will make a decision based on them believing they're better than I think they are, or them believing they're worse than I thought they were. You know, and that can be very difficult to do, especially the latter. When your team put forth a pretty good season, and yet you have the ability to analyze it objectively or as much so as possible and properly, where you're like, I can't look at the standings and believe we're a piece away. We're not. We're not that good. You know, like, we actually have to take a step back here. It's very difficult to do, and I have to believe it's probably the most difficult sales job is to the owner, to go to the owner and say, everything you just saw, that wasn't actually factual. We're not that good, and we have to make a couple of different moves here.
Yeah, you think about when St. Louis traded, they were almost in the playoffs. They traded Paul Stastny for a first-round pick. And like, I think that was the case where they're saying, we're not a Stanley Cup contender, even though they won a cup, I think, only a year or 2 years later. But, you know, for the guys in the room, for the coaches, they're thinking, you're dismantling, you're taking pieces away when we're battling for a playoff spot. But that's probably an accurate read. And I'm glad to hear Chris Drury say that today. Like, we weren't planning to make the playoffs. We're not there yet. Like, that's good. That's a realistic assessment of who you are and who you are supposed to be, which is got to be the cornerstone of any successful management group, is like the ability to be self-reflective and do it accurately. And good to see Chris Drury doing it.
But that, you know, to your point, I think Chris Drury was going to be the guy. Every time a manager's job came up, Chris Drury seemed to be like the, you know, Chris Drury's been offered the job. Chris Drury's been, you know, that. And I feel like, we talked about it on the show yesterday, I feel like he was like the Jim Nill for a while, or has been the Jim Nill for a while, where, you know, he was always known as a general manager in the making, but Detroit wouldn't let him go. And it sounds like the Rangers at some point said, you're going to take this over, just be mindful of it. But his statements today, like saying, well, we weren't going to be in the playoffs, we didn't expect to be, but yet the two guys were fired for performance base.
Like, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Like, no, I think there is a philosophy difference between whether it's Jim Dolan and Chris Drury, and Glenn Sather's still kicking around. Sounds like he's back in the fold there, right?
You know what you need? You need Moose. You need Mess in there.
Well, he is advocating.
As the GM, as whoever. I mean, it's amazing the time to hear him come out and be like, oh, I can coach 100%. I'm like, whoa, wait a second. Like, what? Like, I like Mark Messier. Of course I do. He's been in the Bahamas for like the last 6 years. It's, you know, you can't just step in behind the bench. You can't just go become a general manager because you were great at hockey. Yeah, the whole thing, Noodles, you're right. Like, they're going to toe the company line. They're going to say what they're supposed to say. But there's lots of stuff that does not connect.
Right.
When you kind of add up all the different statements. They're just like, wait, like, that fails a little bit of the logic test. But yeah, I mean, Chris Drury, you know, the comparable might be right here in Toronto. And Kyle Dubas was brought in. I think a lot of people are like, okay, he's going to be the GM someday. Is Lou Lamoriello going to be around for how long? When will Kyle get his chance? Well, at some point, you got to move out the guy that's in the way. And maybe this was just an opportunity to do so because the guy you really wanted to have the job, Chris Drury, was waiting in the wings. So you found a reason, whether it was a good one or not. You just made it happen, which people can complain about James Dolan. He owns the team. He can run them any way he wants. Like, I hate this. Like, the idea that somehow the owner shouldn't do that. He should do whatever he wants. That's his right. Now, you don't have to like it as a fan. You don't have to choose to work for someone like that. But if you own any company, as long as you're like not violating any laws, you can hire and fire whoever you want. It doesn't have to make sense to anybody else but you, because that's the right you've earned by having the billions of dollars it takes to own those things.
Well, he's proven that throughout his existence.
Yeah, like, and he doesn't care.
Like, no, he doesn't.
He's hated in New York. He's hated by Knicks fans. Hated by Knicks fans. And largely because he's been involved with the Knicks. And it's like he's left the Rangers alone. And I think the fear is that of New York Ranger fans, like, hang on, the Knicks are kind of making sense right now. You know, on the right path. So now he's going to dip his toe into the Ranger mess and maybe mess that one up. So, anytime you hear James Dolan comments, it's you're left kind of scratching your head.
That's what he has done. That's his reputation. And I think it's an appropriate one if you're in New York. But, hey, listen, to your point, it is his team. He doesn't have to explain himself to anything. He's made the moves and
yeah.
Doesn't matter. We'll see. I'm curious when we're going to hear from Jeff Gorton and or John Davidson, more so Davidson, who's a very affable guy, always willing to talk. And like right. He's been a Ranger for life, played for the team, was a broadcaster forever, came in years ago as the president and, you know, obviously a very well-respected guy. Mm. And it's one thing, okay, you don't like the GM anymore. Davidson out, it was surprising.
You know, like, right. And you think he left Columbus only to come to New York because of all the things you just mentioned.
Yeah, right.
Because New York was the only place, as you said, that I would have left this job for because it was a special place in his heart. And to have him kind of unceremoniously, and you're right, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the dynamic is amongst the front office and how much a president impacts the GM, how much the GM impacts the coach. I don't know that, but you probably could have spared him if you chose to. But but maybe JD jumps right back on TV. He's been amazing on TV. Maybe the new American broadcast partners say, okay, well, that's a guy we did not think was available. That is.
That wouldn't be shocking at all. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Maybe that's the road he goes down. But we'll hear from them at some point, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll fly. Good one. Good luck tonight. You're a part of the action tonight, Leafs-Habs. It should be a good one. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
All right, boys. Have a good day.
There he is, Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst.
Yeah. I read an article this morning saying that, you know, would Columbus look to bring him back? Like, it's not like he left – like on bad terms with Columbus. Like Kekalainen and him worked well together, and he just had an opportunity to go to New York. Sounded like a dream job to go back to a place that he, and if it crashed and burned, I don't think it crashed and burned, because I think they built something pretty good to,
I think
it's
the
just
Rangers
a weird
in a
ending.
Very good spot, like a really good spot.
It's just a weird ending, you
it's
know?
A very weird ending. And yeah, John Davidson has been a hockey lifer. Listen, he's going to land on his feet, and even if he doesn't, he's made a fortune in this game. He's in a good spot, you know.
Yeah.
He'll be okay. But I am thinking we got to hear from him at some point. You know, he's probably either embarrassed or enraged
or
confused.
Like I said yesterday, he gets paid full, but there's a NDA or whatever.
Right.
Legal.
See you later.
Legal.
You're out the door. We'll pay out the rest of your contract. But
nothing gets discussed.
Yep. That wouldn't
be shocking. That might be something, like it might be a legal situation.
Wouldn't be shocking. Wouldn't be the first time, and likely won't be the last either. Leafs-Habs tonight. We'll come back and tee that up. Again, the Raptors are in action tonight. Kyle Lowry will not play. It's an evaluation game for the Raptors. It's not about wins and losses. Turn the scoreboard off. Irrelevant tonight. Just go out there and have a good time. Let's see what we got. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Leafs-Habs coming up right here on TSN Radio. You can watch it on TSN 4 tonight. Looking forward to this one. And the Habs, they're looking to redeem themselves after last night. It got a little bit carried away for them. And we'll see what happens there, and we'll break all that down tomorrow.
Night.
No, it wasn't a good spot for them. But they're in. Like we all know. You know, it's Toronto, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal. It's just a matter of who's going to play who.
Right. Yeah, it's just a matter of seeding. And, you know, Winnipeg won last night. You know, to me, the Habs, you know, they've got to – it'd be interesting to see who they want personally, not who we think they want. Like, you know, the players in that room, like who do they feel more comfortable with? Who do they think they'd be battle better? This is the one thing what do the Leafs and the Habs have left? Two more games head-to-head here tonight and another one?
Tonight and Saturday, yep.
Right. I often think when you're playing it or potentially playing a team in the playoffs, like not sending messages, beating people up or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying is like, I know I would be saying in the room, like every hit is an investment.
Absolutely.
All of the cliches, all of that. And it goes both ways, not just Montreal, Toronto. Toronto could do that too. It's like, hey, this is what you're going to face 4 to 7 games if you play, you know, if you play us 2 weeks from now.
I expect it. I was thinking that myself today. I'm like, is there going to be any bad blood, you know, percolating here? Like nothing crazy, but a couple of hits, couple of chirps, couple of scrums. I guess, you know, if you're Montreal, you're looking at this where it can go both ways. If the Leafs beat them in regulation over the next two nights, you're playing Montreal in the first round. But
right.
If Montreal beats the Leafs in regulation, you could allow Edmonton to catch Toronto. Like, Edmonton is not completely out of it. Like, it doesn't seem likely. They're 6 points back with 5 games to go for Edmonton. They have a game in hand. But if the Leafs lose back-to-back in regulation, and furthermore...
Just makes it interesting.
It would make it interesting and maybe put Montreal in a position to leapfrog Winnipeg as well. And, you know, there's still a lot of balls in the air. But the Habs, I believe, can technically clinch tonight as well. So there is something on the line for them more than just your standard 2 points. But we know it's coming. We know where it's going. It's going to be a combination of Toronto, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal. And it's going to be fun. We're still a couple weeks away from that and a game tonight to break down. So they're in action. The Jays with a win this afternoon. So they take 2 of 4. They get the final 2 games of that series. That is big. Now they're off to Houston for a series starting tomorrow. So we'll break that down tomorrow. Raptors in action tonight as well. A lot cooking in the Toronto sports scene. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
Chat then.